Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
And welcome back to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here for our first Books and Boba episode of 2022. Rira, Happy New Year. I'm glad to see that you survived the holidays.
Yes, yes. Happy New Year. But, you know, 2022 is a trial run until Lunar New Year comes around in February. So far, 2022 is not great.
Yeah, I think we should say Happy New Year season because it's the season of New Year's.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
How have you been, Marvin? We took a little bit of a break. It was our first mini break since we started this podcast since 2016.
I feel like we take mini breaks every once in a while just because we're not like strictly weekly. But I think it's our first month where we didn't have a book to read since we combined our December and January book picks together. And I had a pretty solid holiday, you know, had some family time, caught up on some video games. I just recently reacquired the PS4 that used to be at my house because my brother took it when he moved out. But he somehow got himself a PS5. So now I have the good old PS4 back. So I've been catching up on a lot of the, you know, AAA games that I've missed over the last few years. Although I did make the mistake of trying to get back into Red Dead Redemption 2. And getting lost in all the open world
stuff. That
was
a mistake.
Yeah, so.
Yes, that was a mistake. Well, we are recording on Korean American Day, so.
Oh, happy Korean American
birthday
Day.
To Korean Americans.
Is that, what does Korean American Day celebrate exactly?
It commemorates the first arrival of Korean immigrants to the United States. So that happened in the early 1900s, I would say. So, every year on January 13th.
Well, I guess congratulations, Rira. You're as the Korean person in this podcast. I guess we should celebrate your arrival.
Yeah, celebrate me. if you have consumed Korean media over the past year, like Squid Games, for example, you should celebrate us because we're worth it.
Man. Well, how was your break, Rira?
It was pretty good. It was pretty chill. My partner's family came from New York, so it was our first time hanging out all together. And they're very into Christmas. Like, I'm talking like stockings with our names on it and multiple presents and holiday-themed desserts. So every time I celebrate with them, it's kind of a culture shock I will never get used to.
It's like you're actually in a Hallmark movie where people really,
it really
care
does
about
feel like I'm in a Hallmark movie. The first time I met Dan's parents was on Christmas.
Wow.
So like when I met them, it just seemed like I was in a movie because their entire house was decorated and they were wearing like Christmas sweaters. It was just a lot. And
yeah,
I was like, wow, people actually do this in America. This isn't just like a movie.
Yeah, I actually don't have any much experience with good old fashioned American Christmas. I celebrate the, I guess you could call it, I don't even know if it's the Asian way, but it's like my family's way, which is we celebrate on Christmas Eve. We open our presents at midnight on Christmas Eve instead of waiting for Christmas morning, like suckers. And yeah, I just, we don't do stockings. Christmas is just an excuse for my parents just to like to cook a roast beef and have a big dinner.
A lot of the times my parents don't even cook on Christmas. Like they go out or they order food in.
Yeah.
Actually, it's quite funny because growing up, we would do the Christmas Eve thing too. I don't know if this is an Asian thing because, like, Christmas Eve, we just kind of...
I mean, I feel like it is, but I also, out of a lot of the Asian families that I know, we're the only ones that do it too. I think it depends how Christian, actually, but your family's pretty Christian, right?
My family is super Christian. I guess we did go to church, but it depended on, like, when Christmas landed, because if it was, like... the following week, then yeah, we went to service like the weekend before. But like on Christmas Eve, we would just give each other presents in like the most casual way possible. There isn't like, it's not like we all sit down in the living room and like give each other presents. It's just like we wake up and we're like, here you go. And just kind of like toss it into like the bed when you wake up.
I have to ask, did your parents ever try to convince you that Santa is real?
Oh yeah, I will give my parents that. They tried to give me the magic of Santa Claus and they succeeded for a pretty long time.
Wow. Yeah, see, I never had that. I always knew the presents were coming from my parents and my parents' friends, because who wants to give an imaginary person credit for buying awesome gifts for their kids?
That is true. Yeah. But then on Christmas Day, I would just go to my friend's house because they were also Asian and they did not celebrate on Christmas Day. So we're like, what are we going to do for Christmas? I don't know. I guess we'll just watch anime because our parents don't really celebrate Christmas. If you are Asian, please let us know on Twitter if you actually celebrated on Christmas Day. I don't know. I mean, also, if you're in a relationship, the chances are you're going to celebrate both days, you know, like Christmas Eve with one family and then Christmas Day with another side of the family.
That did work out for me and my partner as well, because my family celebrates on Christmas Eve. Her family celebrates on Christmas Day. So Christmas has become like this double holiday, which I guess, you know, at least this way we don't have to choose.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, I'm glad that you had a semi-enjoyable holiday season. I know you're on record as being anti-holidays.
Yes, I know am very anti-Christmas. I am the Grinch, pretty much.
There's nothing wrong with being Grinchy. Nothing wrong with that. But yeah, we're here today for our first mid-month news episode of 2022. Rira has graciously compiled a list of the latest Asian American publishing news taken from Publishers Weekly and other sources. And we're going to go through and let you know what's coming down the pipe in the future. So yeah, Rira, what's our first book deal?
All right. So our first book deal is Fawell and Friends bought Amigurumi artist Kim Hwa-eung's debut picture book, A Gift for Nai-Nai. Lin-Lin is determined to crochet her first hat, a special gift for a friend's birthday, and frequently calls upon her Nai-Nai to help her while making it. Publication is slated for spring 2023.
That's cute.
Yeah, so for the people who are unfamiliar with Amigurumi, it's like, have you seen like those cute little kawaii crochet dolls on Etsy? That's what it is.
Okay. I'm wondering... how many Nai-Nais actually crochet? Because neither of my grandparents do that. It seems like a very like Western thing, right?
I feel like a lot of Japanese grannies like knit or crochet.
Yeah.
And my grandmother sews, but that's a different type of skill.
Yeah, though. My grandmother had a sewing machine as well. So I don't know. I guess it's outside of my personal purview, but it's cute. I love stories, especially picture books celebrating grandmother-granddaughter relations. Crocheting seems like really hard to me. Like, how do you create things with sticks and thread? But, you know, I'm not very nimble or creative in that aspect. So
I feel like a lot of people picked up crochet during the pandemic as a hobby. It's either crocheting or baking bread, making right? bread. Yes.
Well, congrats to Kim on the book deal. Next up, HarperCollins bought world rights to Worlds Between Us by Angela Pham Kranz, illustrated by Eyes That Kiss in the Corners illustrator Dung Ho. This picture book portrays an intergenerational bond cemented over food and flashcards. Grandma and Felix show how, despite the lack of a common language, their bond is one that goes beyond words. Publication is scheduled for fall 2023.
We were just talking about grandmas.
Yeah. And again, it's something that is kind of outside of my own experience. Like, I've always been able to communicate with my grandparents because I grew up speaking Chinese. But I know a lot of people who did not grow up speaking the same language as their grandparents. And I'm sure this book will help them feel seen as well.
I feel like I was able to communicate with my grandparents when I was younger. But as I had gotten older and stopped using Korean to talk to my parents overall, I kind of lost my speaking abilities. So the last time I went to Korea to see my grandparents, it was very awkward.
Oh.
Where they would be talking and I would understand what they were saying, but it was hard for me to articulate a response back. So I can definitely understand this kind of language gap that this picture book portrays. And I'm sure a lot of kids can understand it as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, even though you don't share a common language, love is a language. So I'm pretty sure that picture book will highlight on that theme as well. Okay, so our next book deal is Levine Quirito bought world English rights to Nine Colored Deer, written and illustrated by Kaylin Duan. The picture book is inspired by the 1,500-year-old Mogao cave paintings in Dunhuang, China. Jeremy Tang will translate from the Chinese language. Publication is scheduled for fall 2022. Have you heard of these cave paintings?
I have, actually. There's a very famous Chinese animated film that features the nine-colored deer. And I think I know about this because there is a crossover with a gacha game that I play, specifically related to that film right going on right now. So it just so happens that I recently read up on it. But yeah, it's a very distinctive design and aesthetic. And if you see a picture of it, it might be familiar because I think that it's been replicated in other properties as well.
Hold on, let me look at it on Google. Oh yeah, I've definitely seen this.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very specific aesthetic.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. It's being adapted and translated to Western audience. It's,
yeah, I mean, how often do we see something that old survive this long, you know?
Yeah. All right. Next up, Bloomsbury acquired Hair Oil Magic by author-illustrator Anu Chauhan. The book is a generational story about the bonding experience between a mother and daughter during their weekly hair ritual that was inspired by the author's own memories with her mother. Publication is slated for winter 2024. So, again, something that is outside of my personal experience because I don't really have any hair memories as a, I guess, a boy.
Except for the dreaded bowl cut haircut.
But even then, like, a bowl cut was more efficiency than bonding, right? It's just, I feel like a bowl cut represents disinterest in someone's hairstyle because it's just, you know, slap on the bowl and cut around the edges and you're done.
Well, obviously, even among Asians, like, hair texture is different. Like, South Asians have much thicker hair, and I know that they have to do more prep with their hair care at night. Like, they have to use coconut oil, and of course, there's a lot of, I don't know, I feel like there's a stereotype that all Asians have, like, this beautiful, sleek, straight hair, and that's not the case. I mean, have you seen Sandra Oh and a lot of other South Asian talents out there? So yeah, I just like the fact that there is a book that kind of shows maybe like South Asian young readers that, you know, their hair can be beautiful and that it's not something to be ashamed of.
Yeah.
All right, next up, Quiltree acquired Kelly Zhang's debut picture book, Take Me to Lao Lao, which will be illustrated by Evie Zhu. A girl with a big heart and an even bigger imagination goes on a Chinese mythology-inspired adventure to visit her Lao Lao during the Spring Lantern Festival. Publication is planned for winter 2024.
Wow, we have a variety of different ways to say grandma in Chinese
grandma,
in our news this week. And the Spring Lantern Festival, for people who aren't aware, is another name for Lunar New Year in China.
Oh, I did not know that. I was wondering.
Yeah. I feel like at some point we need to update our Lunar New Year themed book list on Bookshop with all these books coming out.
Every year there's something new about the Lunar New Year stack of books.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely have to add more.
All right, next up, Modern Marigold Books bought world rights to See Us Bloom by Korean-American author Kyung-hee Kim. This debut picture book features poems on compassion, acceptance, and bravery. The book will be illustrated by South Korean artist Emily Peck. Publication is scheduled for spring 2023.
So there isn't a lot for us to go on in terms of like, what is this book going to be about? But I like the fact that it is a collection of poems.
Yeah, with illustrations too. That's always cool.
So I am curious as to what kind of stories it will have. So congratulations to Kyung-hee.
Yeah.
All right, next up. Fable and Friends acquired world rights to Last Flight Out by debut author-illustrator Carissa Green. For 9-year-old Hwang, life in Saigon is mostly normal, but when a bomb shakes the earth, her family decides to flee on Pan Am's last flight to America. Hwang worries about missing home, but as she settles in, she realizes that the smell of home and the taste of love can happen anywhere, as long as she has her family. Publication is set for winter 2024.
So this is a picture book, right?
Yeah, because it says debut author illustrator. I don't know if it's an actual picture book or if it's like a middle grade illustrated book. Could be a chapter book as well.
Yeah, because the themes seem pretty dense for a picture book. So that's why I was wondering.
But it's always good to see experience, like the refugee experience shown in children's literature. I think we do really underestimate what kids can take. I mean, yeah. A lot of refugees were kids when they came to America.
And it seems to have a pretty hopeful note. So I think it's good for kids as well. All right. Next up, Bloomsbury bought North American rights to Rita Chang Epic's debut novel, Deep as the Sky, Red as the Sea. The book is a sweeping adventure that follows 19th century pirate queen Shekyong as she fights to control the seas she knows she was born to lead. Publication is set for spring 2023. Man, I love that we're getting more and more books about Asian pirate queens. I feel like that is a theme that I can get behind people writing more about.
Yeah. If you guys are interested in pirate queens, we interviewed C.B. Lee, who is the author of The Clash of Steel, which is a historical fiction on the pirate queen that actually existed in history. So
yeah.
If you're interested in that, we talked to her about her research process and a lot of history.
Yeah, check out that book if you want to, I guess, get in the mood for Rita's book. I'm not sure if Shekyong, the pirate queen that's mentioned in her book, is also a historical figure or not. But again, it's cool that we're getting more stories about pirate queen. I think pirate queen is just a really cool term and theme. And I just like, you know, I've been watching The Expanse, which the last episode is coming out this week. And in this season, there is also a space pirate queen there as well. So. I think it's like
space pirate.
Yeah.
All right. So we have one last book deal left. William Morrow bought rights to Jade Song's Chlorine. Pitched in the vein of Han Kang's The Vegetarian, the book is about a competitive swimmer driven to the extremes by the pressures of living up to her family's expectations, her coach's demands, and the envy of her peers until she decides that to achieve her dreams, she must become a mermaid by any means necessary and no matter the blood she'll spill. Publication has not been announced yet. Wow, that took a turn.
Yeah, that got dark.
Well, when Han Kang's The Vegetarian was mentioned, I was like, oh, this is going to be a weird book because The Vegetarian is about a lady who wants to become a plant. So,
oh,
yeah, that's a turn that I did not expect, but it sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, just based on the description, like we've read books like this before where, you know, we see the effects of the hyper situation of like parental expectations with like societal expectations kind of cause people to, I guess, break.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely a familiar story.
yeah.
But with that said, that wraps up our book deals for January 2022, or at least the first half of it. If I missed any, I'm sorry. Tweet us and I can add it to our next episode.
Yeah. So let's move on to our book news. Rira, what's our first story?
All right. So first off, congratulations to Jessamine Chan's The School for Good Mothers on becoming a New York Times bestseller. The dystopic drama follows Frida Liu, who makes one lapse in judgment in leaving her daughter alone for a few hours. As a result, government officials enlist her in a reform program where custody of her child hangs in the balance. And recently, Jessica Chastain's company, Freckle Films, optioned the TV rights for Jessamine Chang's book. And we have a director attached. So the director is Jude Wang, who is the director of Finding Ohana and was a recurring director of Fresh Off the Boat. And Endeavor Content is also on board for the adaptation, according to Deadline.
Wow. So usually with like option news, you don't get a director attached right away. So that's pretty cool. I think that's a good sign.
That means that they're confident.
Yeah.
I think it's really funny because in the West, leaving your kid for even like 5 minutes alone is considered like a terrible parental thing. But I feel like in Asian culture, they leave your kids alone like all the time. I think there's just like more trust in other people, like other adults around.
I'm not sure. I mean, in Asia, there's a lot of school, right? So you go to regular school, then you go to cram school, and so you're not home until like 9 p.m. anyways on a normal day. I wonder. I think it's also a generational thing, right? I was a last kid as well, as like a child of immigrants, which I think is a similar experience. A lot of people come from like working class immigrant families, right? I don't know if you were a last kid.
My experience was a little bit different because my mom did not work. So she was kind of more of a helicopter parent, I guess, because I had a lot of extracurricular activities and I needed someone to drive me around for all of those. But my cousin, she has two boys right now who are under the age of 5. And I know that she's teaching her kids to be more independent. So I know for a fact that they've gone on errands by themselves. But of course, like the parents are kind of like hiding around the corner and making sure that their kid is like not kidnapped. But it's like, it's really cute that they're trying to instill independence in their kids and having them learn common sense when it comes to like approaching adults for help. It's like, make sure you pick a good adult who can help you. Don't pick someone who is creepy. And I know that a lot of young kids in Korea, they know how to take the subway by themselves. They have their own kid cell phones, which, you know, allows them to call their parents in terms of like an emergency. So I think there is definitely a cultural difference when it comes to leaving your kids alone.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, I'm actually not familiar with Jessamine's book, The School for Good Mothers, but I wonder, do you know which side she comes down on or what? Like, what is the, I guess, theme of that book?
I mean, it's a dystopia drama. So I've heard that it's kind of like The Handmaiden's Tale, where it kind of talks about, like, not patriarchy, but, you know, like the
toxic ideals of motherhood,
the
right?
Strict gender norms of like, this is how a mother should be.
Oh.
This is how you should raise your child. There's only, like, one way to be a good mother. Which is not perfect at all. So, yeah, it sounds very interesting because, like, how would a reform program look for those types of moms?
I mean, if The Handmaid's Tale is kind of one of the touch points, then it's probably rules also made by men about that, or?
Yeah, it definitely has that patriarchal gaze to it. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, but yeah, there's something sinister about this government reform program that makes me think that it's more of like a thriller book in a way than like straight up capital L literature.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. But yeah, it's hard to go by with just like the premise of the book.
Yeah, I guess it's hard to go by when neither of us have read it. But yeah, that sounds really exciting. I always... You know, I'm a big fan of speculative fiction. So I think, especially in these days when a lot of my friends are becoming parents and seeing their, you know, I feel like our generation, well, because of all this, the stuff that's going on, we probably err more towards the helicopter parents than the type of parents who will let our kids be, you know, on their own. So I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, those themes being addressed and confronted in this adaptation.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So Marvin, what is our second piece of news?
So this is breaking news from this week. So we've talked about Abigail Heng-Wen's book, Love Boat Taipei, on this podcast before. We had Abigail on for an author chat. And we've also reported on the casting news, like in a previous news episode. But the film adaptation of Love Boat Taipei has acquired a publisher. Lionsgate will be handling global sales of Love Boat Taipei, which started production in Taiwan before Christmas and has a budget of about $10 million, which I guess overall is not that huge of a budget for a film.
Yeah, it's definitely not big enough for a project this ambitious, in my opinion. Mm. But I've seen creative directors like use the budget that they have to its maximum. So I'm just hoping that it's enough. And, you know, like the cast seemed pretty cool. I remember we've announced the actors a couple of episodes back.
Yeah. And if you checked out Abigail's Instagram, like she's on site with them, like partying it up in Taiwan, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. And there's actually a sequel to Love Boat Taipei. It's called Love Boat Reunion, and it comes out later this month. So for those of you who have already read the book, you can read the sequel in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Well, congrats to the whole crew, especially Abigail, for being one step closer to this film becoming a reality. It's great to see that they're in production, which means we'll probably be seeing this film probably like, what, next year, hopefully?
Hopefully, but it's really hard to tell with the pandemic.
That's true.
Yeah. I don't know what the situation is in Taiwan, though. If they were already starting production, I'm guessing that it's a little bit better over there than it is here in America.
Yeah, I know Taiwan had a pretty severe lockdown like during the summer, but I think they've been getting a little better now that they have vaccinations. And obviously being in American production, hopefully they're following a lot of those, a lot of safety regulations as well. But yeah, excited about the news. Congratulations to the production. And yeah, looking forward to seeing this film out in theater sometime soon.
So we have one last piece of news. This is actually not on our document of news that we're looking at right now. But I thought I would be remiss to not mention this, even though it's not Asian American related. But we did talk about this fraud / phishing scheme. So I thought maybe I should, you know, do an update on it. So I think it was like last year when I mentioned that there was this international phishing scam where someone would email a bunch of publishers and authors asking for manuscripts, and then they would just steal those manuscripts and they would just kind of disappear into the ether. Like it wasn't leaked or anything. Like this person was just stealing manuscripts, and we're using like a very sophisticated way where they were impersonating publishing professionals to get those manuscripts. And this scam has been happening since 2016. So they finally caught the guy. And his name is Filippo Bernardini. And he's an Italian citizen who worked for the UK publisher Simon & Schuster. And he was arrested this past Wednesday. So this is kind of breaking news. But the FBI had been working on this case for about 4 years. So it was like a long, ongoing investigation. And I remember people on Twitter kind of celebrating, being like, oh my God, they finally caught this guy who was just scamming like hundreds of authors and publishers. And yeah, it's just been really weird seeing this case unravel over the past couple of years, because no one knew who it could be. Like, some people thought that it was, like, a literary agent. Some people thought that it was just, like, a desperate writer who had zero new ideas. So they were stealing manuscripts in hopes of, like, creating their off-brand books. But, yeah, it just turned out to be someone who used to work in publishing. And I don't know what his motive was.
Maybe he just really wanted to read these books and couldn't wait for a publishing date.
Yeah, maybe. Because he didn't do anything with them.
It's a very extreme way of building that TBR list, to be honest.
Yes. I don't know. Like, maybe it's like You know, some hackers, they just hack just to show that they can do it, and they don't do anything with the thing that they steal.
Like the white hat of like publishing scams. Is that what you're suggesting?
I guess so. It's like a psychological game saying, oh yeah, this manuscript that you thought was like super secure, it's not. Because I think one of the manuscripts that they were going after was the latest book in the Millennium series, which is the series that has the girl with the dragon tattoo. So he went after like very, very high profile manuscripts, as well as really low, like no one knows what this book is, but he asks for the manuscript anyway. So there really wasn't like a specific demographic for the manuscripts he was stealing.
Wow.
But yeah, very interesting. It's like you said, it's a very weird way to build a TBR pile. Who knows what his motive is. Maybe we'll see in future coming articles, because this is kind of like breaking news since it came out like earlier this week. But yeah, very. I'm glad that they caught the guy.
Yeah, and I guess that'll do it for our first mid-month book news episode for Books and Boba in 2022. We're looking forward to another year of book clubbing with you.
Clubbing.
We have actually, Rira and I sat down for, I guess, brunch for the first time in like 2 years this past week to talk about some interesting things that we want to try this year to help better engage with our book club members. So watch out for that. We'll probably have more announcements in the coming months. I want to remind everyone again that the Books and Boba merch store is back open. We've gotten a lot of requests to purchase our Books and Boba apparel and tote bags since we closed orders last year. So we decided just to reopen our Bonfire store. So if you missed our order window last year and still want to purchase a Books and Boba t-shirt, sweatshirt, or tote bag to, you know, represent, you can do so now. We're probably going to keep the store open in perpetuity now that we have a handle on how Bonfire handles its order windows. So yeah, if you want to support our podcast and look cool while doing it, you can check that out. Also, as always, we have our bookshop.org store where you can purchase a lot of the books that we've talked about on this podcast while also supporting Books and Boba and your local bookstore. So check that out as well. You can find all those links on booksandboba.com.
So for those of you who forgot, our December-January book club pick is She Who Became the Sun by Shelley Parker Chan. It has been pitched as Mulan meets the Song of Achilles, and it is a bold, queer, lyrical reimagining of the rise of the founding emperor of the Ming Dynasty.
Yeah.
So we gave people an extra month because it is a fantasy book, so it is a little bit longer than what we usually read. It's a little bit over 400 pages. So you have about half of a month to catch up.
Yeah, this book has been on our watch list for a while now. It won a ton of awards at the end of 2021. So, yeah, I'm excited to discuss this book with everyone later this month. But with that, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thank you so much for listening, Rira. Once again, thank you for compiling all the book and publishing news for our episodes. Looking forward to another year of great book discussion, book news, and author interviews with you. We do have some really cool interviews lined up in the near future, which means Rira and I have to get reading ASAP. But yeah, it's going to be another great year, at least for Books and Boba. I can't say, I can't promise anything. Yeah, I can't promise anything for the world at large, but at least in the world of our Books and Boba book club, I think it's going to be a good year for us.
We'll see how many books I can read by the end of 2022. I feel like I didn't read as much in 2021, and I can understand why, because it was very depressing.
You say that, but we read at least like 20 books for this podcast.
Yeah, but at least 20, but that's like not 100. There are people who read 300 books in 1 year, and I honestly don't know how you guys do it, because that is, you have to pretty much read a book every single day. And I just don't know how you guys are able to do it. But my goal is probably 100 books in 2022. I think that is like,
wow,
that's like enough of a challenge that I can believe Like, it's believable. Like, I feel like I can do it if I take it seriously enough.
Well, I'll check in with you from time to time to see where your book count is, just as a pace keeper. That's my promise to you.
I just have to pick a lot of short books. It's going to be the year of novellas, you know?
All right. Well, thanks for listening. I'll see y'all next time. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @BooksandBoba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Hey, Sharon.
Hey, Roman.
How are folks still racist?
I know, right? We're like 2 decades into the 21st century.
Yeah, and second question, where's my jetpack?
Well, I can't help you there, but have I got a podcast for you. Modern Minorities is a show where each week my longtime pal Roman and I uncover common and uncommon truths that we all need to hear for our majority brains and ears.
Yeah, Sharon and I have spoken to doctors, lawyers, directors, climate activists, angry Asians, athletes, chefs, writers.
Folks who are Black, brown, gay, straight, and everything in between.
Past guests have included comedian Margaret Cho, Southern Poverty Law Center journalist Geraldine Mariba, comics creator Jean Lun Yang, and many, many more.
We've even talked about Ramadan, Black History Month, Kamala Khan, and Robin being queer.
It's like we're trying to solve racism with the podcast.
Challenge accepted.
So check out Modern Minorities at modmypod.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Remember, we're all modern minorities, but we're no one's model minority.